and as the transformed beings now aimed at an ideal different from the animal way of life, there arose disharmony between the manifestations of the animal and the manifestations of the dawning human being. There was enmity between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman, and this enmity will finally make the individual crush the head of the serpent or gain complete mastery over the animal consciousness in himself. But thereby he will himself get his heel crushed, which means that this mastery cannot possibly come about without pain and suffering. Degeneration takes the form of crushing his animal faculties or that foot which bore him to the peak, or highest form of genius, of the animal kingdom, fulfilling its supreme ideals of greatness. And, because of this, terrestrial man, considered as an animal, already finds himself limping. He is not an animal in the purest sense, but he is not a finished human being either. He is a wounded refugee between two kingdoms. At present he finds himself in a no-man's land. He is a homeless son of God. 83. So the conditions experienced by terrestrial man at present are not as paradise. The highest material happiness he can attain is wealth and luxury, but as this happiness can definitely exist only on the basis of other people's poverty, need and misery, it will continuously result in hatred, crime, strikes, lockouts, revolution, war and mutilation, and this means unhappiness for the whole of the terrestrial community and incontestable proof of an imperfect social order, the conditions of which are still, to a great extent, that man shall gain his bread by the sweat of his brow. This is one half of the animal kingdom's degeneration or ruin which, in connection with the other half manifesting itself in sexual abnormalities, unhappy marriages, irresponsibility and unfaithfulness, entails that, to an increasing degree, woman must bear her children in pain. A state of accursedness in the form of the degeneration and ruin of the animal kingdom is thus brooding over the community of terrestrial mankind. 84. The condition of terrestrial mankind manifests itself largely as darkness. This darkness is in the first instance the result of the full awe of animal manifestations, and in the second instance this result is of a deeper nature because it develops a knowledge of good and evil. The full constitutes then, in its deepest or cosmic analysis, to each of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. As the full is thus the same as manifesting oneself in contact with the animal life principle, this said principle is obviously identical with the tree of knowledge. To manifest might instead of right, to take rather than to give, to live according to the idea, every man for himself and other expressions of the animal life principle will all be identical with those apples which became forbidden fruit during and after the creative principle's light radiation came into being, and the enjoyment of which, within the initial area of the said principle, led to expulsion from that form of happiness and harmony upon which the animal kingdom is based. 85. And so the animal kingdom is that garden of paradise from which the prospective human being has to be expelled. This expulsion, however, is not a punishment, but appears, on the contrary, as the highest expression of eternal love occurring behind all phenomena. And out of this love, laws, just as eternal, determined that living beings will be guided forwards and upwards, experiencing more and more beautiful forms of existence. And in order to influence all human beings to abandon that state of animal harmony and happiness in which they lived in the animal garden of paradise and to prevent them from being excluded from growth towards greater light and perfection, no other means could exist than this: to let a stronger light from a higher kingdom begin to radiate into the animal kingdom. This higher kingdom constitutes the real human kingdom, and its radiant light streaming in over the earth will thus be recognizable as the voice of the Divine Father directed towards Adam and Eve, in other words, the Divine Creative Principle's light radiation. 86. In contrast to a stronger light, a weaker light will more or less be an expression of darkness. Thus the animal kingdom's light, or form of consciousness, has to appear as darkness or imperfection in contrast to the real human kingdom's form of consciousness or stronger light. And to the same degree as people begin to feel or experience the form of consciousness belonging to the real human kingdom, so this form becomes an ideal for all individuals, and just to that same degree the longing for this kingdom grows, while in a corresponding degree they feel antipathy towards the animal form of consciousness. As this longing and this antipathy appear as the releasing factors for a transformation from animal to human, and this transformation is identical with the expulsion from paradise, so this expulsion will in reality not be expulsion, but will come about solely upon a basis of all the human being's own wishes and free will. The darkness caused by this transformation or expulsion is not the outcome of being accursed either, but on the contrary, in its cosmic analysis, it is to be considered as identical with an education which will enrich the individual with those qualifications which make him capable of living so closely in contact with the laws of the real human kingdom, that later on he can be born as one of that kingdom's own beings and can appear as a divine human being. That this education is at times of a painful nature is simply because, cosmically speaking, it also has to act as a danger signal. It is like a bell that rings when the individual is going astray, and the more the individual strays from the natural way, the louder will it ring. From a cosmic aspect, all the pain in the world, physical as well as mental, constitutes, therefore, the greatest form of protection for all living beings. It is a guardrail to prevent the individual from falling into the abyss of eternal death. If it were not for pain, no individual would be sustained in an eternal existence. No living beings would ever be brought back from the wrong road, but would continue on it, which again would be the same as an eternal silence, for without pain, no contrast to life, and without contrast, no manifestation, no road towards perfection, no evolution, no experience of existence, but a universal equilibrium preventing any form of movement. An eternal death would be the master of life. But thanks to pain, the opposite is a fact. Life is the master of death, and pain a divine blessing. Pain shows the way to God, to truth and to life. 87. Until the divine creative principle's light radiation began to take effect, terrestrial mankind had been living in a paradise zone of consciousness, but in essence this was guided by the dark radiation from the same principle, while the animal instinct of self-preservation, or the animal manifestation in this zone, had not yet become the fool but existed, on the contrary, in the form of heroic deeds, and idealism. This zone does not have any real importance for this introduction, but we will come back to it later on in Livitzbog. However, here we are going to give a brief outline of the direction in which evolution will guide mankind out of the last part of the animal kingdom where it still finds itself, and lead it forward to the birth on this globe of the real human kingdom, thereby abolishing those factors which at present prevent this same kingdom from being of this world. We are now going to indicate those factors which are the conditions for a new garden of paradise and an all-embracing peace on earth. 88. With the divine creative principle's light radiation, a new power or form of energy began to manifest itself. This new power was the dawning of love, and gradually as it began to influence people, life came to mean more than self-preservation. Parallel to that instinct there began to arise a new interest in other people's right to live. But this interest naturally appeared only in a very feeble or elementary form in relation to the instinct of self-preservation. Gradually, however, as this interest was nourished at certain intervals by world redeemers, by increasingly stronger and stronger new impulses from the creative principle's light radiation, it then became a factor with which human beings could associate. It evolved into religion and morality. And these associations have gradually developed to form the great religious communities now existing all over the world. Every community of this kind is based upon the highest idealistic concept of the people concerned. The nature and character of this idealism will therefore express the same people's highest temporary standard of development and so must change accordingly as the said standard moves smoothly forward towards perfection. And, as this idealism is gradually inspired, or guided, by the divine creative principle's light radiation, in a correspondingly rising degree, it will be expressed by humanity's interest in other people's right to live, in other words, neighborly love. 89. Before modern means of transport were invented and communication between different continents was still almost impossible, or at least very difficult, terrestrial people on these continents lived isolated from and independent of each other. and as the daily struggle for existence was not quite the same on each continent, the experiences of these people were also of a different nature. This necessarily resulted in their concepts of morality and idealism being different too, deviating from each other in different parts of the world. So each continent had its special forms of religion, idealism, and morality. Gradually, as the light radiation increased, the most advanced religions took a direction towards internationalism, and the followers of these religions believed that their special religion ought to grow and envelop all peoples of the world, while the other existing religions were considered heathen and their adherents infidels. But, as it was only the inner core of these religions that was of universal or international nature, while the outer forms and adaptations were founded just for the specific people among whom each of the said religions had arisen, so a religion of this kind could never be quite satisfactory to any people other than those to whom it was directly adapted. And the various so-called world religions therefore appear sharply opposed to each other, and not one of them would be in a position to fulfill the conditions absolutely necessary for a religion which should be a special religion for the entire world and for terrestrial mankind as a whole. But as they do possess international ideas and tendencies within themselves, as mentioned above, each of them influences terrestrial humanity towards aiming at unity, towards one flock, one shepherd. And each of the religions, communities and religious societies within the whole of terrestrial humanity is, in fact, comparable with the scattered, single parts of a nebula, condensing and eventually coming to constitute a solid body. This solid body is the absolute union of all terrestrial people under one religion. 90. But a religion capable of attracting the interest of all terrestrial people must be of such a nature that it inspires the most outstanding representatives of science as well as representatives of the most primitive ignorance. It must be able to give infallible answers about life and experiences in the West as well as in the East. It must satisfy all nations. But a religion which has to satisfy such enormous demands cannot be of a limited nature. It cannot be aimed at a certain people, a certain science or a certain area of experience. It cannot be partial to anyone or anything. It must let every conceivable possibility for development remain open. Hence, such a religion must not only be of international, but also of universal nature. It cannot be merely an idea of truth. It must be truth itself, otherwise it will fail. It will be a dividing power instead of a uniting one. It will cause dissension between its supporters and non-supporters. It will put a barrier between believers and non-believers, between saved and lost. It will defeat its purpose by creating nationalism instead of internationalism, selfishness instead of unselfishness, and thus become a source of discord instead of a basis for the fulfillment of terrestrial mankind's wish for a lasting peace. Thus, a religion that is to make mankind, divided as it is into races, nations and religious communities, into one flock, can therefore be formed only by a factor which is absolutely identical for all people, regardless of whether they belong to a white or a colored race, or whether they are primitive or civilized. It must show all things having their valid place in the divine world plan, and thereby it will make everything and everybody intelligible to each other. Such a religion cannot be a fabricated religion, but can only be absolutely life's own religion, see section 15, or the eternal truth itself in an unveiled manifestation. This again means the same as a religion having an outstanding knowledge in harmony with all experiences of life's eternal laws, its deepest problems and the divine world plan. A religion which realizes life's highest predicaments and has to be so strong that it can gather and unite mankind's greatest interests and thereby become an unshakable basis upon which the coming human kingdom can rest. This religion cannot be a myth, a legend, an assumption or a theory, a combination of traditions and dogmas. It cannot be a conviction which has become an authority just because it is Buddhist, Islamic or Christian. Neither can it be a conviction which has become popular just because it is either Eastern or Western, because it is European or American, because it is materialistic or religious. It can only be a conviction which is authoritative because it is an analysis of fact, and has its roots in terrestrial mankind's daily life and genuine experiences. the spiritual basis that will make all people on earth one flock, or one unit, cannot thus be formed from a belief in the Godhead, but from an experience of the Godhead. It must be the very vision of the Eternal Father. Just as the individual has learned to experience day and night, summer and winter, sea and land, so he must also learn to experience the one great God, the only great Shepherd. Solely in this experience lies all wisdom, happiness and harmony. And only through this experience can world peace be conveyed to all earthly zones, and the divine real human kingdom arise. To experience the Godhead is then the same as to experience His manifestations. These will again be expressed as the living being's daily existence or experience of life. But the individual will have no faculty to experience daily life with all its phenomena, its so-called crimes, mutilation, war, accidents, poverty, need and illness, as well as its light sides, as identical with the manifestations of the Godhead until he realizes the true identity, position and purpose of these factors in the divine world plan, and thereby becomes aware that they have a divine mission and lead to a divine and sublime goal, and that they are all, without exception, in the closest contact with the concept, everything is very good. To attain this ability to see life from so widened uplifted a view of the horizon that the whole of the world plan becomes visible and becomes knowledge will then constitute the common spiritual interest, the absolutely one and only religious basis that can unite all terrestrial people into one nation, one kingdom, one flock. 91. The spiritual basis upon which all terrestrial people are able to unite cannot be a religious belief but has to be a religious knowledge. Just as 2 and 2 make 4 for people all over the world, so too, must life's highest and the most important analysis be of an international nature, and the same for all people. As long as this is still not the case, but Catholics believe that the universe is Catholic, Muslims that it is Islamic, Buddhists that it is Buddhist, and Jews that it is Jewish and so forth, this will merely imply that the religious basis of the people mentioned above has not become knowledge, but on the contrary only appears as an idea formed by each of those people's wishes and desires, for if this were not so, it would, like the sum of 2 and 2, be international in character. Absolute knowledge, or science, which means an analysis of facts, cannot be of a national or individual nature, for if it were so, it could not be true knowledge, it would, on the contrary, only appear as identical with a supposition or an imaginary fact that might exist. If there were individuals who believed, for instance, that 2 and 2 made 3, 5, 6 or 7 and so on, none of these results would be science, but, on the contrary, only individual presumptions of the nature and existence of the true sum. It would be the expression of insufficient talent in that special area and would have to be changed so that the suppositions in question were raised to a scientific level, and then the true result, the figure 4, would appear. While the former figures were expressions of individual ideas and would have to be altered, the figure 4, in the above example, is an expression of an analysis of fact and cannot be altered. 2 and 2 make 4 everywhere in the universe and through all epochs, whilst the other results exist only in certain areas of consciousness maintained by ignorance. Just as the recognition of the fact that the sum total of 2 plus 2 would have to be altered as long as it was still an erroneous and imperfect assumption, so it is with terrestrial mankind's recognition of the greatest mystery of life or the eternal truth. This is still largely appearing as 2 plus 2 equals 3, 5, 6 or 7 and so on, and thus comes to reveal itself correspondingly as mere individual concepts of the truth, or of the true value of life, thus becoming a religion for a people whose attitudes have been in harmony with such a concept. Hence, to some people this true value appears as Catholic, and to others Buddhist and so on, in accordance with the special perceptive abilities possessed by the people in question. But, just as little as the real total of 2 plus 2 can be an individual answer, or can be Catholic, Islamic and so on, just so little can the real analysis of the supreme laws of life, or the eternal truth, be individual, be Eastern or Western. The eternal truth, or the absolute analysis of life, is the same throughout the universe. It is the same for all individuals regardless of their supposition and imagination about that truth and whether they know it or not. And it is this eternal unchanging analysis of the truth, this true value of the collective manifestation of life, its movements and vibrations, which all terrestrial people and all nations must be made to know and to accept. This alone possesses the necessary stability within itself to bring about peace for mankind over the whole world, to direct the spiritual course of an entire globe up towards the eternal regions, towards the summit of life, happiness and universal love. 92. As any action which is expedient and has a certain purpose in itself is called a normal action, while any action which is purposeless or inexpedient is called an abnormal action, we have here a yardstick by which we can measure whether a concept of life or a knowledge of life's highest mystery is identical with the absolute or unchangeable analysis of the eternal truth, or whether it still represents only an imaginary value, analogous to 2 plus 2 make 3, 5 or 6 and so on. If this knowledge reveals vibrations, movements or manifestations in life which are quite purposeless or inexpedient and thus correspondingly exhibits purposeless areas of existence, this only reveals that the said knowledge is not identical with the true or unalterable analysis of life, but on the contrary, merely produces an assumption which has to gradually give way as the analysis of the true facts or the true knowledge of life springs forth. In this analysis, no kind of purposeless manifestations, movements or unplanned areas are to be found, but the contrary, where everything is revealed as being absolutely purposeful and every single reality works in complete accord with the other realities of the universe. This creates an outstanding interaction in harmony with the clearest sense or intelligence, thus showing us that all life or existence constitutes a divine, intelligent world plan, unveiling every detail as being in the most complete harmony with the concept, everything is very good. The microcosmic as well as macrocosmic, the so-called evil as well as the so-called good. A knowledge that shows existence to us in this way can never at any time be changed, but will stand out as the eternal, unshakable result of all vibrations, movements and phenomena of life. It is the highest disclosure of the eternal truth that can possibly be given. It is the analysis of the very facts regarding the revelation of the mystery of life. It is the absolute knowledge of the universe, of the Godhead and of living beings. The revelation of such knowledge is the main factor in the divine creative principle's new world impulse now radiating over the earth. But in order that such knowledge should really become a united, practical basis for all nations the world over, it will be necessary for them to go through similar or related experiences. The contrast between nations will have to be softened. The human beings' desire for spiritual knowledge will have to be brought to bear on the same questions in the East as in the West and vice versa. An association of all nations can therefore only be based on a common interest, a common goal, changing the common imperfection to perfection. The common interest which all nations must thus be brought to attain is already visible as identical with their present growing joint interest in creating a way out of strife, away from the zones of war, suffering, ignorance and superstition. All aims and interests of the nations are now getting visibly more and more concentrated on following the creation of mutual harmony, spiritual as well as material, and thereby absolute world peace. The leading principle for the development or the creation of such a mutual and fundamental interest has been material and technical expansion. On account of this development, with railways, ocean liners and aeroplanes conquering the distances between continents, mutual contacts have been made between the various nations. With the aid of technical instruments, terrestrial mankind's outlook expanded and science was born. By means of schools, universities and teachers, education and scientific experiences are spreading throughout the world in the form of civilization and culture. Primitive races now participate in the pleasant as well as the unpleasant experiences of civilized people in their perfections and imperfections. They learn to read and write. They gain access to modern knowledge about history, geography, astronomy, chemistry, physics, mathematics and technology. The less civilized races are gradually being given the same opportunities as more cultured people to take examinations and degrees and to qualify for diplomas and apprenticeships. Their contact with civilization in all these ways will bring about a crumbling of their old superstitious ideas. And on the basis of the same contact, as they also come to know the unpleasant experiences of civilization, its vices and diseases, its unfortunate social order with its greed and extravagance still tolerated, its poverty, homelessness, starvation and misery as well as its mutual exploitation of individuals, so these less civilized people will relatively soon, spiritually and materially, reach the standpoint of the more cultured people regarding the demand for justice and for receiving an absolute knowledge concerning eternal realities, in other words a knowledge of life and its laws. 93. Terrestrial people all over the world are thus having the same experiences, facing realities which lead them towards making a united religious foundation, towards a true knowledge of the universe. In addition to this, as mentioned before, the distances between continents have been very much shortened through modern means of communication. Furthermore, countries are to a great extent being inevitably joined together by radio, telegraph, telephone, the world press, international leagues, associations, trading companies, travel organizations and so on. Consequently, we see before us a strongly growing development towards a pronounced unification of all countries and peoples, or an international world kingdom in its creation. The countries are already infiltrating each other so much materially and economically through exports, treaties and federations, or have progressed so far in their coalescence, that a single nation's collapse or crisis cannot in many cases take place without entailing a misfortune or catastrophe in the rest of the world. Terrestrial mankind, like a great nebula, with its different races, religious societies, sects and nations, is rapidly condensing into a compact, solid body, into one kingdom. This kingdom, embracing the entire planet, will then be ranked under those types of kingdoms which, later on in Livetsbog, will be described under the term planetary kingdoms. Here on Earth, that kingdom is indeed still only in its embryonic stage, but by virtue of the new world impulse, it is now being guided towards its final birth, towards its true existence as a reality. 94. As a religious concept and lifestyle is the basic foundation for people's moral and physical behavior, the above-mentioned spiritual course towards unity cannot be brought about without causing a corresponding reflection in the material world. And so we see here that all phenomena, experiences and events are aiming at unity. Just as terrestrial people aim for a common spiritual foundation, so they are also aiming for a common material foundation. As this expanding development is supported by the advancing growth of unselfishness and universal love caused by the divine creative principle, so all actions based on selfishness, and therefore harmful to the community, will come to dissolution or disintegration as, too, will dogmas and superstitions. The most conspicuous material mark left already by the light radiation is the factor we mentioned earlier in this chapter under the term state power. State power is thus an institution of unselfishness, and the energy or power functioning and emanating from it is universal love. Hence, it is its task to ensure protection and justice for the single individual within the community. But as terrestrial people are not yet perfect, their universal love, and with it their state power, cannot be perfect either, but must be limited by the standard of justice and morality accepted by the general public of the time. To the same extent that the spiritual qualifications of human beings develop their unselfishness and universal love, to the same degree will their state power also develop in the form of a system of law and justice, and to the same degree as it develops to be more and more protective to single individuals, so it becomes more and more an expression of love. The system of law and justice in the form of state government is thus not the final and finished result of the development of unselfishness and universal love in the community as a whole, it aims at a far higher goal. 95. to aim at a higher goal always means to overcome obstacles, and terrestrial people have indeed all kinds of obstacles to overcome before their system of law and justice reaches a better form than that which we now call state government. These obstacles are the results of a still remaining animal instinct of self-preservation in terrestrial mankind, based entirely on selfishness or egoism, being the opposite of the basis for state power, which is unselfishness or universal love. Of these two forms of energy, unselfishness and selfishness, the latter constitutes by far the largest part of the material in people's consciousness.